Welcome to the Bulletproof Cashflow Podcast, the go-to place to gain financial freedom through real estate investing. Here we interview investors, mentors, and entrepreneurs who share their secrets and advice to help you build passive income. Let's get into the show.
Everyone, this is Agostino. Tracking market metrics can make a big difference in your investment strategy. Today, we talk about the importance of developing a data-driven approach to your multifamily investing with Neil Bawa. Neil is the president and COO of Financial Attunement. He brings a new perspective to real estate investing and housing trends using data and business intelligence. So we'll discuss his unique analyzing strategies, some of the resources he uses for understanding markets, and the local economy and trends to making his buying decisions. Neil leads the company's operations group and drives acquisitions of these multifamily properties. His group owns and operates over 1,000 units valued at over $111 million. Aside from that, he also teaches seminars on multifamily to all over 1,000 people a year through multifamilyu.com. So let's get Neil on to share his knowledge and understanding of multifamily properties. He'll also share his techniques and tips on what to look for when analyzing multifamily deals.
Hi, Neil, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Agostino. I'm jazzed to be on the show. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Well, maybe you can give us a brief introduction before we get going here.
Sure. So I am very different from most of the folks that show up on your show. I'm not real estate royalty. I come from a technology background, tech company, ran my own tech company, sold it, and basically learned real estate, investing the proceeds of that money, and eventually fell in love with multifamily, and here I am. I own and manage about $100 million worth of real estate together with my partner. About 220 active investors invest with us, and we buy multifamily and student housing properties in 7 states. The portfolio is currently slightly larger than 1,000 units. So I'm absolutely passionate about multifamily. I love every aspect of it. And I'm just a blessed person that's had 2 separate careers and loved them both.
Excellent. You know, one of the things I know about you is that you're really big into data and demographics. And I'm actually certain that you must get a lot of questions about the real estate market, what it's going to look like for 2018 and beyond. Maybe give me your opinion on what the world and U.S. economy currently look like. What do you see it today and where do you see it going?
Oh, I love that question. And I have to tell you, I've been teaching, I teach about 2,000 students a year, various different seminars and webinars in real estate. And I love answering this question because for the most part, I'm bearish, right? So if you look at me in 2011, 12, 15, 17, I was bearish. This is a change for me, Agostino. For the first time, I'm bullish on the world economy. I'm very bullish on the U.S. economy, but only in the short term. And I define short term as 2018, 2019, and the first half of 2020. So that's about 2 years from now, give or take a month or two. I'm bullish in that time frame, and there's reasons for that. If you look at the world economy from 2011 to 2017, there was always something bad happening. Sometimes it was China blowing up with its real estate mess that happened. It was Japan with their ridiculously overwhelming debt. It was a European zone with, you know, Greece being dead man walking and Italy having banking crisis. There was always something to point to and say, this is what's affecting the world economy. This is what's slowing it down. Except today in 2018, in the short run, we don't see any of those things. Every economy in the world, whether it's China or Japan or the European zone, or Europe, or us is growing faster than they were last year. The International Monetary Fund just updated their forecast for world growth. They've also updated their forecast for U.S. growth. So in the short term, the next 2 years, the world economy looks very, very strong. And I hope I don't jinx it.
Well, if you have that kind of power, you're a different type of investor.
That's true.
So, I mean, I'm guessing then the bullish part, short term, bearish part, long term, is that how does that impact the job market then? I mean, I'm sure right now you see obviously a strong job market. Where do you see, I guess, jobs in the future as far as the slowdown hitting first? Where do you see it happening? Retail, manufacturing, or anything along those lines?
Well, I think manufacturing and retail are more likely to get hit than some of the other places. I think services are going to do fine. Technology is going to do fine. But here's the key part of this. I do not think that the job slowdown leads to an increase in the unemployment rate. It actually leads to a plateauing effect. So if you look at the unemployment rate, it peaked at 10% in 2010. And since then, it's been dropping. It's currently at 4.1%. By the end of the year, most forecasters are forecasting that it will drop to 3.8, 3.9%. I'm good with that. I think that's what's going to happen. And then when it starts to pick up, it's going to be a very slow and gradual pickup. So it might take an entire quarter for it to tick up 0.1%. So I'm not at this point over the next 2 years forecasting a increase in the unemployment rate, but we're definitely going to see a decrease, a slowdown in the number of new jobs being created, which is why for real estate professionals, this is a very critical time to keep an eye on the jobs and not on the national jobs because they don't matter. Real estate is local. You've got to keep an eye on your local jobs because some of the cities around the US are already turning.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So, I mean, with that in mind, so if you're moving into a new market, what are some of the key indicators you're looking for?
Well, then? I'm looking at job growth, but I'm not just looking for job growth. Typically, people say, well, 2% job growth is good, 3% is excellent. What I'm looking for is an acceleration in job growth. I'm looking for cities where job growth today is higher than it was 3 months ago, which is not very common because for the most part, we are at an unemployment rate that's so low that we're slowing, right? Our job growth is slowing. It's certainly not as high as it was last year. So I'm looking for those sorts of cities. When I see cities like Orlando, where job growth is accelerating, when I see cities like St. George, Utah, where job growth is accelerating, that tells me that I'm still early enough in the cycle to make an investment in those cities.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I know you mentioned before the call, even Ohio might be one of these states that you're looking at too. Do you see the same sort of thing or the sort of market out here that you favor, or do you still favor some of the other places you just mentioned?
Well, I mention Ohio to my students very often, right? So when I'm talking with my bootcamp students, I'm talking about Ohio very often because it's kind of like the comeback kid, right? Ohio has had a very tough time. They've lost population. Columbus, I think, is the only city that has escaped the population loss. But it's very much a comeback hit. You see a number of cities turning around, Cincinnati, Cleveland, even Dayton, Ohio, which is kind of the perennial laggard, turning around and producing jobs. So Ohio is one of those markets which is a higher level of risk than some of the Western markets, but it's also going to produce higher returns if you keep an eye on the data. So if you're looking at the data, and I'm honestly not looking at the data in Ohio as often as you are, Agostino, because you live there, but it's certainly one of the markets to keep an eye on because there's potential and there's revenue because it's coming off a low base. It's coming off a base where unemployment was high, employment job growth was low. So it's coming off that low base. So it has the ability to get larger percentage gains than, let's say, the San Francisco Bay Area, which is coming off a high base.
Yes, that's exactly what we see out here as well. Plenty of opportunities. It's finding the right opportunities is always the trick, right? That's always the thing that we're trying to look out for. And I guess you can say that once we do find those opportunities, getting the financing on some of these is also a key part of taking one of these deals down. So I guess, you know, interest rates are fine right now. I think they're great. You know, even some of the hard money lenders are pretty good. But with interest rates on the rise, where do you see, I guess, how do you see it impacting real estate and other asset classes if you're studying those?
Well, I study that a lot. So one of the areas, and I have an actual webinar on my website, and I'll give you the URL at the end of this presentation. I have a webinar that's called How the Banking System Changed Real Estate Forever. And this happened in 2008 because of quantitative easing. The $4 trillion that was injected by the Fed into the economy warped our economy. Okay? Think about this. Mm-hmm. Never in history before 2008 has the Fed raised interest rates 6 times, and they've now raised them 6 times in the last 16 months. And guess what's happened to the cap rates? In the past, you raise points 1.5, your cap rate starts to go up, right? Which means homes get cheaper, real estate gets cheaper, multifamily gets cheaper. But it didn't happen. Throughout the 16 months, real cap rates kept declining, which meant real estate kept getting more expensive. And this happened both on the single family and multifamily side. So what has really happened is that the connection, the causal connection between interest rates and cap rates has been temporarily severed because of the $4 trillion of quantitative easing that we've engaged in since 2008. This is $4 trillion of money that has no yield. It has zero yield. It can't really go into bonds for a variety of reasons. And even if it does, it's going to make 1% or 2%, and that's not enough. But real estate and stocks are making 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 or more percentage. And so a lot of that money flows into real estate. So despite the fact that interest rates have gone up, there is currently not a single shred of data that shows that cap rates have slowed down. They continue to decline. Real estate continues to get more expensive. In my mind, the Federal Reserve needs to withdraw a lot more than $10 billion a month from the market for there to be a slowdown in cap rates. I do think that if the Fed raises another 3 or 4 or 5 times, cap rates might plateau. The chances of them increasing are extremely small, because the moment you see even the slightest decrease in prices, all that money on the sidelines, that trillions of dollars that's on the sidelines, that dry powder re-enters the market and yanks the rates, cap rates down again and yanks the prices up again. So it's a very odd situation to be in.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many people that are pointing out, they're saying, oh, it's way too expensive right now. But I mean, I don't know. It's for those that are waiting, it seems to me like it's going to be a short-term thing in terms of how long you can possibly wait. I guess what I'm saying is, is that if you're waiting for the for a big sale, I can't imagine it to be that material if you're in it for the long term. I guess if that makes sense.
Well, I'm going to give you a message, and I give this to people clearly. Those that are waiting for a big sale are going to be disappointed. Firstly, in 2008, real estate crashed because of an absurdly large number of subprime loans. We don't even have a 50th of that number of loans, subprime loans, in the economy today. That's number one. Second, the people that are holding the homes are people like me, landlords. We can survive a short recession. We can survive a 1 year or 2 year recession because the homes that we bought after 2008 are all cash flowing. The homes that were purchased in 2005, 6, 7, none of them ever cash flowed. They were all supposed to appreciate. That was a faulty premise. Today, these homes appreciate, are cash flowing. We're going to hold on to them. So the price decreases that people are looking for are not coming, people. You might see a recession. You might see job growth fall. You might see the GDP of the US fall. But please don't think that millions of people are going to sell their homes just because it happened last time, because there is no demographic data. There is no driver, no economic driver to support a large decrease in real estate prices or a large decrease in stock prices. Keep in mind, there's trillions of dollars out there. It's looking for yield, and the stock market and real estate beat the crap out of every other kind of yield, especially bonds. So it's very, very difficult for the market to decline significantly. Small declines happen, but you're not going to see a flood of real estate coming to the market because of a small decline.
That's right. Yeah, that makes sense. Now, I guess, what are your favorite tools when you're looking at data and making decisions as to what to buy? I mean, I imagine they must throw out a lot of resources and make people want to just stop whatever it is they're doing and start writing stuff down.
Absolutely. So I'm going to give you a set of tools that I use. And, you know, unfortunately, these tools are not free. But I tell people that they are absolutely the best buy you will ever make. Now, keep in mind, I don't benefit financially from any of these tools. I'm not involved in these companies. But I highly recommend them to people. Even if you're buying a single home, let's say you're buying a home that's a rental home and it's $100,000. That's a typical home in Ohio, $100,000 rental. I can tell you that over a 10-year time frame, use of a single one of these tools, a single one of these tools will save you at least $40,000 or $50,000. So the tool that I use to pick my cities, and I use a variety of them, and I'm going to name all of them, but here's a good tool to use. It's called Local Market Monitor, localmarketmonitor.com. And this tool basically ranks markets in the U.S. They currently rank 320 markets in the U.S. And, you know, if you go and buy a national membership, I think you're going to notice that there's a very strong correlation between what I have purchased in the last 2 years and what's at the very top of their list in terms of markets. You'll notice a very, very strong correlation. Now, I don't just depend on local market monitor. I pay for CoStar, which is $32,000 a year. So it's for multifamily guys like me. But if you're in that sort of range, look at CoStar. If you don't like local market monitor, an alternative is Housing Alerts. That's housingalerts.com. That's Ken Wade's company. They're brilliant. They charge a little bit more than local market monitor. They're a little above 1,000, with local market monitor being a little below 1,000. I find the services to be equivalent. So I suggest LMM over Housing Alerts, but maybe you like the approach that Ken Wade takes. That's a phenomenal tool. Once again, it will rank every single city in the US. Now, none of that matters without the second tool, because a lot of people say stuff like, Orlando is awesome. Well, I guess Orlando is clearly one of the top five markets in the US. But do you understand that when I say the word Orlando is awesome, I should also be adding a second statement, and that is, in a city as awesome as Orlando, at least 60% of the markets are awful to buy in. These are markets with crime. These are markets with delinquency. And so you need a neighborhood tool. The tool that I prefer, and there are several of them out there, is Neighborhood Scout. Neighborhood Scout ranks individual neighborhoods. So anytime I'm pitching a deal, whether it's a deal that's $2 million or $40 million, I'm presenting my investors with reports from a tool named Neighborhood Scout. It's very inexpensive. Anyone can afford to buy it. The data that it gives you for investment is staggeringly good. So those are my two favorites. I could keep going for a while, but as long as you pick one of these city tools and one of these neighborhood tools, you are ahead of 99% of all investors in the United States.
Oh, absolutely. No, this is great, valuable information. Absolutely. So when I think you touched on this just a second ago, as far as when you're talking to your investors and you're providing them with this data. So when you're modeling your acquisitions, how does that data make its way into your whole process? Is that something you do before you even handle the financial side? I mean, how do you make the decision when you're going to pursue a deal? Like, how does that data make its way into your decision process?
So I will look at a deal anywhere in the US. I'm not stopping myself. Deal flow is extremely tiny right now compared to what it was 2 or 3 years ago. So I look at deals all over the US, but I sort them in the order of my favorite cities, right? So a deal from anywhere in Utah, or in Boise, Idaho, or in certain parts of Washington is going to be get looked at before a deal from, let's say, St. Louis, Missouri, or Detroit, Michigan, right? Those are not my favorite cities in the US. But when I'm looking at some of the cities that are in my real estate trends webinar, for example, we've had a couple thousand people watch those. Those are great cities. Orlando is going to get my attention, and Tampa is going to get my attention way before Fort Lauderdale ever will, because Fort Lauderdale is really an expensive city at this point in time. So a lot of the appreciation that had to happen has already happened. So you start with cities and you sort them based on your data. Now, the neighborhood piece, I don't go to my agents and say, I will only buy in this neighborhood or that neighborhood. I would never buy anything, Augustino. I mean, that there's no choice to do those kinds of things. What I do, though, is when a property arrives, I pull a CoStar report. And then to make sure that CoStar hasn't gotten anything wrong, I pull a Neighborhood Scout report. I compare the two of them. And if that neighborhood looks good, then I start to underwrite it. And if I have two opportunities at the same time, I might use this data, whether it's from Housing Alerts or Local Market Monitor or CoStar or Neighborhood Scout, I might use it to eliminate one deal out of two. But for the most part, I just use them to rank my deals. And I think that's the approach that everyone should take. You don't eliminate. Obviously, if your Neighborhood Scout says that this is a war zone, you just dump it immediately. But most of the time, it makes sense to use it for the purposes of ranking your deal.
Now, that's interesting. How do you use the data then from a long-term perspective, or do you use it? I mean, it seems to me like you can also determine that maybe after 10 years, a certain area may improve or might decline. Or do you have someone that on your team, perhaps, that keeps track of that sort of thing? Or does any of these services actually alert you when those sorts of things happen?
Well, none of these services have the ability to predict anything further than 2 or 3 years. So most of them are either predicting a year out or 3 years out. The only service that I find that's very useful for those that are in the apartment business, may not be very fruitful for those that are in the single family business, is weareapartments.org. That's W-E-A-R-E, apartments.org. This site has long-term predictions for apartment needs by metro in the U.S. So you look at Phoenix, you look at Orlando, you see massive needs. But when you see Pittsburgh, you see almost no need at all in the long term. It doesn't matter what's happening in Pittsburgh in the short term. It seems like the metro is doing well. But I want to look at that 10-year timeline. And the only website that provides objective, data-driven information on long-term multifamily need is weareapartments.org. So if a metro doesn't show, you know, big gains over a 10-year time frame, then I usually tend to be not as bullish on that particular metro.
No, that's great. I mean, that's one of the things that I imagine in your model, that if you follow a typical syndication model, at least one that we follow anyway, is we do a refi at 5 years or so, pull out the money, redistribute to investors, and then sell at 10. But it's also worth noting that every year we're tracking, or at least we're trying to keep an eye on that property, the neighborhood, and if there's any improvements or any declines that may impact the overall valuation of that asset. So that's certainly one of the things that we want to keep track of.
You know, I do something similar, but not quite the same. And the reason for that is, to me, I'm trying to generate the maximum annualized returns. So if I see an area slow, but it's still decent, I might make a decision to sell that property, even though it's still continuing to move upwards. So it's a very, very subjective decision. As you said, you've got to constantly look at the data and figure out what is the maximum annualized yield that I can give to my investors.
Yes, absolutely. So how do you see the rest of 2018 playing out, at least in the short term anyway? I know you said you're bullish, and what other sort of hints and tricks do you see there for 2018?
Well, you're going to see inventory shortages worsen. There is no doubt in my mind. In the Class C, B-minus category, you're going to see inventory shortages worsen. And there's a variety of reasons for that. I think that as the millennials get older, they don't want to live with parents anymore. You're going to see demand go up. You're going to see supply go down. For people like me that are looking to buy, there's going to be less and less deals available. That's why I've started to construct. So I just finished a 102-unit mixed-use property in Utah. I'm also building a 322-unit property in Buffalo, because when supply problems become so bad that it becomes totally a seller's market, it makes sense to start doing some construction and become a seller yourself. So that's really one of the solutions. And I'm predicting that we're going to see another surge in multifamily completions, in multifamily construction. But I think the big picture for those of you like you, Augustino, that are buying existing properties, is you're going to find inventory will get tighter. You're also going to find that there's not going to be much of an impact from interest rate hikes in 2018. We could see some impact in the market in 2019.
You know, that's interesting, because I think what we're also finding is that there's a lot of out-of-state money that's coming in and driving some of these prices up to almost to a point where it doesn't even make financial sense. I mean, we'll analyze a
I think half of those people are coming from me, Augustino, because on my webinars, I have hundreds and hundreds of people, and I'm constantly telling them stories about Ohio and Columbus. So I think I'm partially to blame for your woes there in Ohio.
There we go.
Yeah, it's driving. I need a commission on your next deal, man.
There we go. Well, because it's driving some unrealistic returns. It doesn't make any sense.
Unfortunately, California investors are like that. We are unrealistic in general, which is why I own nothing in California.
Well, that and the taxes are just out of
control. That's right. It's crazy. The taxes are absolutely crazy.
That's funny. So I know you mentioned Orlando is definitely one of your favorite places. What are some other best metros and worst metros that we should pay attention to for 2018?
So it really depends on where you are in the U.S. If you're in Ohio, I want you to look at Columbus. If you're up north in the Chicago, Wisconsin area, Grand Rapids, Michigan cannot be beat. If you're in Florida, that entire area that starts at Orlando, Freeway 4 starts at Orlando, ends in Tampa, with Lakeland, Florida in the middle, that area is phenomenal to look at. I think there's tremendous deals in that area in general. So the middle of Florida is phenomenal. And if you're on the West Coast, Boise, Idaho is great. Both Phoenix and Tucson are good cities to look at. And then secondary cities like Tacoma, secondary cities like Spokane. You know, Seattle's too expensive, but Tacoma is not, and neither is Spokane. So those are great opportunities for investors on the West Coast to look at.
Nice. Yeah, well, I'm going to check those out too. So, you know, shifting gears a little bit on tax reform. I know that that tax reform bill that's just recently passed, and I was fortunate enough to see some good stuff, at least with my recent return. How do you see other real estate investors capitalizing from that reform bill?
I think it's huge. I think it's insanely beneficial to multifamily investors. I'll give you one piece, and it's so big that it's the size of an elephant, right? The depreciation schedule has been changed. So now you can basically depreciate a much larger portion of a multifamily year in year one. And that's juicing our returns sometimes by 5 or 6% a year. I mean, that's absurd. I'm usually interested in anything that can juice my returns by 1% a year. We're talking about 5 or 6% a year in post-tax revenue just coming from the depreciation change. So that by itself is absolutely massive. There's some not so well-known pieces of tax reform that really encourage companies to buy real estate. So it encourages, you know, companies like Apple to own, you know, $100 million or $1 billion campuses. So as they bring money back in from outside the US, because one of the big pieces of tax reform was that you're paying a lot less taxes on money that you stashed abroad. And we're talking about hundreds of billions of dollars. When they bring that money in, because of the changes in the tax bill, it actually makes sense for some of that money to go into commercial real estate. Now, not a lot of it is going to directly go into multifamily, but it's definitely very positive for commercial real estate as a whole, because there's a ton of benefits for companies to buy real estate. And that those benefits really come from many different clauses in the tax reform bill, with depreciation acceleration being really the big one, the elephant. I don't see any downsides of the tax reform bill for investors. I see a ton of downsides for individual homeowners, because obviously, you know, especially in expensive states like the East Coast or West Coast states, where, you know, you've gotten rid of or you put a cap on what you can expense in your income from a taxation perspective, from a property tax perspective. So a lot of downers for single family, but a ton of benefits for investors.
No, that's actually interesting, especially the depreciation side. So I'm assuming you're doing cost seg on all your properties, right? Does this depreciation apply to straight line or?
So this essentially helps with the cost seg process. Your cost seg gain in year one is going to be much larger from now onwards compared to what it was in 2017.
Wow, very nice. So it seems like even if you're doing a straight line, it's going to be good. You use cost seg, it's going to be massive, it seems to me. Wow.
Yep. Straight line still has some benefits, but by God, why would you not want to do cost segregation? Cost segregation is authorized cheating. It's legal cheating. Well, so every property, the first damn thing that we do is cost segregation. I mean, that's a way for us to return ridiculously negative K-1s to investors while giving them money. I have investors who refuse to believe that I'm giving them so many losses while handing them money. And I tell them, it's the law. I'm not doing anything wrong at all.
Well, and the thing is, though, I find that many multifamily investors aren't even aware of cost seg. That's actually happened on several occasions at this point. So it's quite interesting. Yeah. Well, I know that you're educating many, many people. So what advice would you have for aspiring real estate investors?
Well, the one thing I want to tell people is, it's important to educate yourself. And so many guests on your podcast have already said that. But jump in. I see so much analysis paralysis. And one of the pieces of that is, oh, the market's so expensive, it doesn't make sense for me to jump in now. Not really. There is no real estate market. There are real estate markets with an S. There's 2,200 separate markets in the US. And for every market that is in 10th inning, like San Francisco or New York, there's a market that's in the third inning, like Las Vegas. There's a market in the third inning or maybe in the fourth or fifth inning, like Columbus, Ohio. Know your markets, know your data, but the whole concept that, oh, the market's too expensive and it's too late for me to jump in is nonsensical. That's just you being lazy. That's my message for you. There's plenty of opportunity in the market, and there always is for people to jump in. You know, what I do is I teach people multifamily, and I teach multifamily boot camps. I don't like these expensive $40,000 boot camps that people are pitching. So my boot camp's under $1,000. It's very specific. It's very step by step. And it says, do all of these steps and you can go out and buy multifamily on your own. Don't involve me. I don't get a piece of it. Here's exactly the process that you follow to go out and buy multifamily. And that's why a lot of people benefit from that and really enjoy that process. If you're interested, if your listeners are interested, the bootcamp is at multifamilyu.com. That's multifamilyu.com/bootcamp. And if you want to take all of my free content, there's a ton of free content that I teach about real estate. That is at multifamilyu.com/, I think it's Agostino. Let me check on that. But I think that it's that my team set up a link for you or your people. They can go directly to that link.
You know what? The education side of things is so important. I think that many people, they either try to jump in or they just get scared. They get that analysis paralysis. We have so many of those people at our biweekly meetings, and some of these people have been studying this stuff for years. They still hadn't bought anything. I'm really big on education, but also taking action. You have to take massive action. That's the only way to get.
Well, from my perspective, I think if you want to take action, go to multifamily.com/Agostino. All of our webinars are stored there, including the ones that we've done in the past. Take a look at them and you'll notice that the webinars are designed to drive you to action.
Great.
Excellent. So education is overrated. Training is underrated. I want to train people to go out there and do these things themselves. Take some of the fear, some of the phobia off, because I think that's really the value that we can provide to up and coming people, and hopefully we have a chance to partner with them as they're, once they're on their
way out. Excellent. So I know you got a lot of stuff going on. So what is the most exciting thing you have going on right now?
Well, I think what I'm finding is that the incredible rise in prices in Western cities, Seattle, San Diego, Los Angeles, San Francisco Bay Area, has created a very large number of 1031 millionaires. So they've created all these people that make no money. There's not much cash flow in their properties, but they have millions and millions and millions of dollars of 1031 funds, and they don't know what to do with it. And I think that I'm looking towards creating a solution for these people, and that's what I'm working on. It's not a done deal yet. We've done a few deals, and I'm very excited about that because these people can go from being rich from an accredited investor perspective to being cash flow rich, and they can do it in a very short amount of time. And many of them actually suggesting that they invest in Ohio, in some of the cities that you're looking at that have cash flow. And I'm very excited about taking people from being paper millionaires to being cash flow millionaires. And that's just blowing my mind how many of these people are out there right now that don't have a solution.
Excellent. Well, so how can people reach you?
Well, the best way to reach me is through my website, multifamilyu.com. So my website has contact information. To get started again is multifamilyu.com/Agostino. That's a good way to get started. And then we can continue the communication. We can hopefully, some of you end up showing up for my e-bootcamp, the multifamily bootcamp that I teach that students around the US take. Interesting enough, I have more students from Ohio than I do from most other places in the US, and I've never figured out why.
Well, people out here are hungry. There are plenty of deals out here. And they just need to understand and apply that education and actually take action right afterwards. So it's glad to see that. Glad to see that. Very vibrant community out here.
It is. It is. Absolutely.
Well, thank you very much for joining me. I truly appreciate it. And look forward to talking again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Neil. As you heard from Neil, knowledge of data, trends, and understanding the market using data is a great way to protect your investor assets and maximizing growth. Now, aside from data analytics, Neil also enjoys teaching and mentoring. He has presented to hundreds of real estate events, has been attended by over 2,000 people as well. So I've been through his material, and it's definitely worth something you need to check out. You can learn more about what he teaches, and you can also reach him via his website at multifamilyu.com. I hope this information was helpful for you guys, and I'll see you on the next episode.
Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed the Bulletproof Cashflow podcast. For more free podcasts, articles, videos, and resources, go to www.bulletproofcashflow.com.